Brian O'Hara has been growing vegetables for profit for more than 25 years at Tobacco Road Farm in Lebanon, Connecticut. He speaks throughout the Northeast on economically and environmentally sound vegetable production techniques and is known for providing, quote, mounds of detail in a concise, practical, and cohesive manner, end quote. And I'm happy to introduce you to Brian. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, Gary. All right. Okay, it's great to be here, one of my favorite events, and I'll try not to talk too loud, and I'll try to hit it very concisely and get you guys piles of details on how to practice some of these agricultural techniques. So, you know, there might be a bit of shuffling around because obviously our rooms got switched, so I'll just give it a couple minutes, and I'll just do a general overview discussion of my farm maybe for like 2 or 3 minutes here, and that is we grow vegetables commercially in Lebanon, Connecticut. We have about 2 or 3 acres in vegetable production. We've been doing that for almost 30 years. It is our farm is our livelihood. It always has been. We've had economic success with a small acreage vegetable production. We are not certified organic. We practice biodynamics. We grow crops year-round on a pretty large scale, about an acre of low tunnel production. And we don't apply any pesticides of any nature. And we count on our soil fertility to handle all of our insect and disease difficulties, essentially. Also, weed control. So on the farm, all of our effort really goes towards soil care. And it has always been that way. And it has been very rewarding with large volumes of crops. So if the soil fertility is the number one agenda, all the other aspects of crop production become easier. So less irrigation, less insect and disease control measures, less weed control, quicker harvests, and better quality crops running in through to processing and delivery, as well as better storage life on the vegetable crops. So basically, getting the health and vitality of the crop up to speed tremendously benefits all other aspects of crop production. And then there's the results in the marketplace of the consumer being getting a very tasteful, high-nutrient vegetable. So we did all that for a number of years, tremendous attention to soil fertility and soil quality details. However, there was constantly more difficulties, and so we would as things deteriorate, because, of course, the environment is deteriorating, and crop production becomes more difficult every year because of overall pollution aspects, and which I'm not going to get into in detail. However, let it just be said that, of course, the entire ecosystem is struggling. Our farms are within the ecosystem, so only naturally are our soils on our farms also struggling. So there's all kinds of different diseases and insects and weeds and crop production difficulties that occur as these factors play in on our farm soils. So eventually we came across something called Korean natural farming, which has been very useful in addition to all our other agricultural practices. Korean natural farming introduced us to the concept of indigenous microorganisms, which is going to be the gist of most of what I'll be talking about today. Korean natural farming is based on traditional Korean agriculture techniques combined with some more modern concepts, mostly coming out of Japan, and focuses quite a bit on care and biology in the soils. So a biological viewpoint to a large degree of soil care. So they're the ones that encouraged us into such things as no-till, which I'll be talking about tomorrow morning, and the creation of these microbiological cultures. On the handout that I've given you, you know, I'm going to run through the actual culturing steps, but there's additional information in that on some of the other culturing fertilizers that Korean Natural Farming utilizes. I probably won't be talking about some of the other fertilizer preparations. I'm going to focus mostly just on the indigenous microorganisms. So basically, the indigenous microorganism, the concept is that the field culture in our fields of annual vegetable production, we have destroyed the natural microbiology that is in place, that would be in place under, say, the forested ecosystem that was previous to our clearing and cultivating these lands. And basically the concept is that one of going into your forest regions or other very vigorously rich microbiological conditions and capturing that microbiology and then bringing it back to your farm and vastly increasing it through various culturing steps. So essentially what we're doing is we're going into the forest close by our farms, and we are using our senses to find microbiological conditions that we would like to bring back to our farm and enhance our farms with. It's called indigenous microorganism cultures because it is that. The theory and concept from the Korean Natural Farming is that you should culture nearby biology. So, because that is most adjusted to your little niche of your ecosystem. There's some people that think that it's useful to culture, say, old growth forest and very biologically rich conditions and bring them back to our farms as well. But the Korean method is essentially to go close by into something that's rich close by and culture that and start working with those microbiology. So I'm going to start going through all the culture steps, and there's, you know, a reasonable amount of details to this kind of thing. And if you have questions, you can ask me on the spot, because we've got an hour and 15 minutes. I could miss some things you guys might want me to fill in, so feel free to ask me questions as we go through. So let's start running through some of the slides here. The first step to culturing the microbiology is simply to get a box or a container that's going to host your original culture. What's recommended is a cedar box, such as this, with a loose-fitting lid. However, you can use a wicker basket, a different wooden box. Pretty much, you could probably use a cardboard box. The box is less important than most of the other culture steps that I'll be talking about. The cedar is nice because it resists the culture taking into the wood itself, because cedar is resistant to microbiology, decay organisms. But basically, don't let the box hold you back. Just a lid is useful to keep excessive rain off of the material as you're culturing it. But what you do is you take partially cooked grain and you put it into the box. So generally we use brown rice, organic, and we cook that rice for about 20 minutes in a 1-to-1 ratio of water to rice. And so it basically comes out as a hard cooked rice. You could use a different grain. However, probably an organic one, or at least a grain that does not have pesticide residues, is probably a wise move, because we're culturing biology So you don't want to get into materials that would compromise that biology. So once you've got your partially cooked rice, you fill the box about two-thirds full of this. It's sterilized grain medium is what it is. Of course, you've sterilized the grain. And you're going to get a fresh start by putting it in the box and bringing it out into the forest. We don't sterilize the box. It's not really, you know, a sterile culture, like as if you were trying to culture mushrooms or something like that. But we do, the grain is sterilized through the cooking procedure. And you bring it out into the forest. So it's a great time to go for a walk in the woods and look around and try to determine where a nice culture would be. So when we're looking for the proper site, we will use things like the smell of the forest is very useful. Usually a little bit higher ground is more what you want to culture. You don't want to culture wet conditions, say, when you're talking about bringing that biology onto your drier farm. So a little bit drier or higher than your farm is certainly better than wetter than your farm. And often underneath large deciduous trees that are in a reasonable state of health, so that the tree has been keeping that soil biology fed for a long period of time, perhaps in a vigorous state even. So large deciduous trees are often utilized, or other special environments. Use your senses, your eyes, your nose. And you, when you start to get an eye for it, you can really locate some nice places. Any other signs, you know, any other abilities you guys have, certainly the fairies will guide you there. But whatever means you have, get out there and use your senses to get to the proper place with your box. This box is, I believe it's 18 inches by 1 foot by 6 inches. That's a large box, and we're culturing for several acres. You could certainly use a much smaller box. However, this step of culturing this rice is very inexpensive. You know, it's a gallon of rice that fits in that box, I believe. And cooked, obviously, it swells. So, you know, anything of that nature. This is going to give you a lot of culture, though. More than we need for 3 acres of vegetable culturing. And then you bring it out into the forest, and you get it into the leaf litter in the forest. So you move the duff aside, and you get the box, and you work it into that duff a little bit, and then you heap the leaf matter back over the top of it so that it is buried in the forest leaf litter. And so, after about 5 to 7 days, this is generally what the grain looks like. So, a lot of fungal organisms have moved into it. A lot of other biology from the forest, I'm sure, is also rich in there. But in general, it is about 80 to 90% white. Sometimes you'll get a little green, a little red, a little blue. But as long as it's primarily white fungal organisms, you're off and running. All right, we got some questions.
Are you uncovering the box when it's in the woods?
Are we uncovering the box when it's in the woods? No. The box stays covered, and in this case right here, where we set this box, the fungal organisms were so outrageous and beautiful as I uncovered them that I actually pitched some of the sticks and leaves into the box. However, that's not necessary. Either way, if you throw some of the nice fungus in on top of the rice, that's fine. It will certainly make its way through the cracks of the box as well. And the lid is primarily to to keep it hydrated, but really to keep the rain from getting into the box excessively. So that's mostly what the lid is for.
And you cook the rice. Hey.
Yep.
Thanks. You cook the rice and you pour it into the box. So I had imagined originally like the pot in there, but you actually just cook it partially and then pour it into the box.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, cook the rice and then pour it into the box. Yep. Might take a scoop and just shove it in there. And, you know, I kind of pack it down a little bit, but not super tight or anything. A couple other questions?
What time of year are you doing this?
Oh, great question. What time of year are we doing this? So basically, you can start pretty much as soon as the snow is melted out. And however, it takes much longer in the spring, that early. So in the height of summer, this culture will be ready in 4 or 5 days. In April, when you're culturing, it may take 2 weeks. And maybe sometimes it doesn't come out quite as good in spring or fall. It's particularly vigorous once early spring and late fall. It's particularly vigorous when things warm up. However, we've cultured very early and very late, and it has worked. So longer, and I have never experimented with this, but in the Korean practices, when they need to culture in the winter, they bring in forest leaf litter and bury boxes in hoop tunnels just with masses of leaf duff all inside of a hoop tunnel. But we will stockpile enough that we've never had to culture during the winter. I can repeat it.
Yeah. How long is that good for?
How long is the culture good for? That is, it immediately, when you bring it out of the forest, you get into the second culture step, which I will discuss presently, and then we can go back to questions. This is another view of the same box. You can see some of the rice. So the second step is simply to take organic brown sugar at a 1-to-1 ratio. I believe that's by weight. And mix the brown sugar and rice culture together in a crock. So that happens as soon as you bring it out of the forest. And then you cover the crock with the perforated paper. We just poke holes in that paper with a point of a knife, very small, so insects don't get in or out, and a big rubber band around it. And so now the culture is stabilized. So the sugar is not only a food source for the microbiology, but it also highly stabilizes the culture. So we don't let the first stage of the culture sit around at all. It's the second stage, once it's been utilized with sugar, that then it becomes a storable culture. Do I have it written down in proportion to the property that we work? No, but I will be discussing it in the next culture steps. This culture here does not particularly, I mean, if you're just doing a garden, do a quart of cooked rice. And do this stage is very inexpensive. And so it doesn't really matter, you know, and it can last for a year or longer. So if you culture a full gallon of rice, you can take the culture. Sometimes we'll culture multiple times over the season and mix all the cultures together in future steps from multiple places. So you don't really have to worry about the size of your culture here. That box has enough culture to, when it's expanded into next steps, to probably treat 10 or 20 acres. It's the next steps that I'll talk about that are more limiting in terms of how much volume you need compared to just the box in the woods. Yeah, you could use less, but what I'm trying to do is encourage you to use more because it's so inexpensive. Things can go wrong, you know, maybe part of the culture will take better than other parts, or it's better to have a reasonable size. It's so inexpensive to take, you know, 2 quarts of rice and set it in the woods, and if, you know, then just a cup or something. Yep. So this is the second step, which then becomes a relatively stable microbiological culture, and we store it in the root cellar. And there's some other preparations there, too, fermented Korean natural farming preparations. So, as I was saying, we often have multiple cultures of this second stage, and we mix them together in the next stage that I'm going to talk about. However, there is some also some concept that a spring culture works better for spring growth, and the summer cultures work better for summer culturing, and the fall culture works better for fall cultures. So we, at this point, mix them all together, but there probably is some truth that if you take your spring culture and use that spring and save it till the next spring, you might get a biology that works very well at that time of year as well. It's a very exciting proposition to be working with all these organisms, and as I'll show you the next steps, it's very invigorating because they're very invigorated as well. So there it is being stored. And the third step, and this is the step that is needs to be paid attention to in terms of how much you're going to do, because this is actually, unfortunately, the more expensive step. The third step in the culturing cycle is to take that rice, that cultured rice sugar mixture, and put it into a pile of bran. And in Korea, where this originates, rice bran is in complete excess as an agricultural byproduct from the creation of white rice, of course. So it is very inexpensive to culture bran in Korea. In America, bran, particularly organic bran, is highly valued because it is used in animal feed because of the tremendous demand for organic grains right now in animal feed. So as far as I've ever seen, there is not an inexpensive place to get really cheap, non-pesticide bran. Is it any kind of bran from any grain? I would think so. I've used wheat bran most commonly, which is most available to us. I've used rice bran. And recently I used oat bran with tremendous success as well. Probably any bran. And so let me just talk about bran as a substrate for culturing microbiology now. So bran is... it has a nutrient profile that seems very useful for this kind of culturing. And perhaps it has a lot to do with its nitrogen to carbon ratio and the amount of starches and other materials that are left in the bran from, obviously, taking it off of the outside from the inside of the grain, that have made it very effective at doing this. And we constantly experiment with trying to find other less expensive mediums to grow on. And so in that world, you know, we talk to mycologists, you know, mushroom growers and things like that to try to come up with something that is less expensive, would still culture this well. We haven't been able to find that material. And as far as I know, you know, there's a lot of people out there doing IMO at this point, and nobody that I know of has come up with a better substrate than bran for the culture. So basically what we've tried, just to give you guys ideas if you want to try, start experimenting with other cultures, is we've tried blending... if something's more nitrogen-rich, say coffee grounds, we will blend it with something more carbon-rich, like straw. And so we try to combine various materials to get close to this level of a carbon to nitrogen ratio and add in various other materials. But we haven't had the success that we have had consistently with the use of bran. So bran itself, we purchase through our local food co-op, which is where we deliver our vegetables. And, of course, so they give us a reasonable deal. And I believe it's less than $1 a pound. Maybe it's around 75 cents a pound. And we'll use up to maybe 600 or 800 pounds a year in culturing. We do this multiple times over the course of a year. We'll culture maybe 200 or so, maybe 300 pounds of bran at a time in a pile. And so this culture step, let me finish with some other materials that we've used. We've used coconut coir in the material to some degree of success. We've blended coconut coir as a material to kind of thin out the bran. And that's been somewhat successful, but we've used too much bran sometimes, and it doesn't create the nice chunky white growth that we like to see here. This is what you want to see here. When it gets to this stage also, so let me just talk about getting this in place now. So basically we lay down a pile of bran and then you liquefy the sugar rice culture in a 5-gallon bucket or something, and the ratio is there. It's like 1 to 500 in water. Not that that needs to be exact or perfect or anything, but basically you're just introducing that active forest biology into some water to liquefy it and then spread it immediately onto the bran pile. And you hydrate the bran with that liquid till it is at the stage where when you squeeze the bran, you can get a few drops of water out of it. So you hydrate the bran with the liquefied IMO number 2 is what that sugar culture is called. And you can also add some other preparations from Korean Natural Farming, but they're as a nutrient source for the culture, including seawater and some of the herbal extracts, but they're not necessary. So basically, you can just take that IMO number 2, liquefy it, and hydrate your bran pile. This is what it'll look like after a few days, maybe 3 or 4 days into the culture step. I'm going to talk about temperature and I'm going to talk about location next. These are just some pictures of the culture. I'm going to hold off talking about temperature. I'm going to come back to that. Right, and that's so she's wondering about the volume of rice, how much that could do in terms of the bran piles. So that box of rice that we brought into the farm could do the entire year of 800 or 900 pounds of bran. And that's why I'm trying to describe to you that you don't have to worry about the rice sugar. Just make as much of that as you want. It's very inexpensive. It's this stage that is how you need to gauge how much you can create, and this is going to give you the volume of material that you're going to be spreading on your field. This is where you really need to figure out how much bran you need and how much area are you going to cover. And so this is where you'll need to pay attention to volumes. And I'll give you some ideas of that when I get to the culturing stage or spreading stage of the culture. This is ideal. When you see frothing microbiology, that's what I love to see when it's so vigorous and, you know, life comes from the froth, you know. And at this stage of vigor, the culture has really exploded. The rate of growth is phenomenal. We just cultured a little pile of oat bran just a couple weeks ago that we had gotten in from our composting system. It was like 50 pounds of bran. And even in these temperatures, which have been consistently, you know, below freezing every night, the pile, the small little pile, you know, is just unbelievably biologically active through this culturing step. It's a very, very powerful culture that really explodes under this phase. Yeah, should this be done in the shade? Let me talk about that before I talk about temperature. So I've got pictures. Okay. So you can see that this culture is in partial shade. Basically, it likes to be high enough and dry enough and in the shade, but not dense shade. So basically, under deciduous trees on our field edge is where we like to go. So there's some light filtering through, especially these days with the forest canopy being so weak, you could culture anywhere these days. But so in a partial light kind of condition here, and we like to cover the pile with a black plastic tarp. Oh, let me actually talk about covering it first with you lay your brand down, and you've soaked it, and you've mixed it about with a pitchfork or a shovel to incorporate the liquid and make sure it's all hydrated evenly, and you pile it maybe about 8 inches high, not much more, because if it gets too high, the temperatures get too hot, which I'll talk about in a minute. So the pile's only about 8 inches deep. And then you cover the pile with a protective coating, either leaf, straw, or we often use the grain bags themselves or any combination of those kinds of materials. So you keep the pile, the bran, actually covered with another carbonaceous material. And then originally, we just kept the black plastic tarp in place to keep rain, excessive rain, from overhydrating the pile. However, we saw that it cultures better in general under the black plastic tarp. So now we've taken to actually using the black plastic tarp pretty much all the time. At this point, we were just throwing some sticks, you know, 1x2s on top of the pile, and then throwing a tarp over the top of those. Now we actually put it up on hoops. Let's see if that, yeah. So now we actually culture, the tarp is up on just metal hoops. This is a good picture because animals love to eat this material in a huge way. It left quite an impression on me when I was up at Julie's place and Rawson's, and I was there and Aaron Englander was talking about the IMO culture, and he literally said, we're standing in front of a pile of IMO3, and he literally says, animals love to eat this stuff. And the family dog came walking right over and started woofing down giant chunks of IMO number 3, right in front of our eyes, right on cue. And so it is very attractive to livestock. Even the cat is curious. Chickens would devour this material. Poultry, I'm sure pigs, I'm sure, you know, everything loves to eat this. Yes, I have eaten it myself. Somebody asked me yesterday, what does it taste like? And, well, it doesn't taste very good. You know, it's kind of chewy. It's all bran and kind of moldy tasting. But animals love it, and that's where I got the idea. You know. So you do got to protect it. These are in fenced in, you know, just a low fence, you know, a little box fence on tomato stakes around the culture area to keep out animals. And so now, and you can see here too that this was covered with the grain bags. The culture, it is so voracious, it eats those grain bags in a matter of days. It is just, the stuff is totally on fire.
So you're putting the bran right on the floor.
The bran is right on the soil.
Yeah.
And there is this concept that to culture again and again in the same place is of benefit. However, the benefits to the area, which I'll show you later, are so enormously great that I've taken to actually moving it around some too. So those are some of the ideas. Yes, rate on the soil. You know, the soil, you know, your biology, it's almost like multiculturing it by doing it in the same location as well. So yes, voraciously active. And it also... But one of the most important parts of this whole thing that I'm going to talk about today in terms of culturing this, you know, the other steps are very easy. This one is the most more complex. Just, it's not terribly complex, but you've got to keep it hydrated at this step because with this level of biological activity, it consumes moisture very, very quickly. So that 65% moisture that you had with squeezing the bran out is going to be gone in like 2 or 3 days. And generally, it requires a re-wetting. Doesn't need to be recultured, but just a reintroduction of moisture after a couple days into this culture step to get it back up to a reasonably hydrated level, maybe even again, kind of depending, 1 to 2 waterings. But another important aspect of this step is to not let the pile get too hot. It's extremely active, and it really wants to heat really quickly, and it wants to get too hot for the forest microbiology. If the pile starts getting much above 120 degrees, you're going to start losing a lot of aspects of that natural microbiology that you captured from the forest, and you're going to start just getting really heat-loving microorganisms, which still, it won't ruin your culture if it goes above 120, but it's not going to be as useful of a culture if it goes above 120 degrees. So you want to keep, that's really the biggest aspect of management here, is that you've got to keep the temperature down. We like to see about 110 is right where, about where we want, 115 maybe, somewhere right there. And to do that, you've got a couple different management techniques. You've got hydration, which will affect the temperature, and you've got the turning of the pile when you hydrate it, that you can cool it by actually physically turning the pile. But really, most importantly, is how thick the pile is. And I said 8 inches, but that is really maximum. And we often go with much lower than that, like 4 inches. That bran pile, the oat bran we just cultured, some of the most beautiful white fungal cultures were on bran that was like a half inch in thickness. So just really thinner is going to keep down the temperature much better. Would there be a decrease in the activity if it was in a controlled environment, not in an open soil contact? It's possible. I've never tried it. I imagine it would still work. But it, from the recommendations from the Koreans, they definitely are in favor of open natural culture, natural forces, multiple place on the same site. So it would probably work. You'd probably get a great culture, but that's just the general recommendations, and you can see why they probably like it that way too. Yep. Sure.
When you moisten, do you use regular hose water?
Do we use regular hose water for moistening? That's a great question, because I forgot to mention, and I rarely mention this point, but you can't use a chlorinated water for any of this. You know, you need to have a natural source of water, because of course the chlorinated water is antimicrobial, and it would certainly upset the whole culturing process. So yes, we do use a hose, but it's from a well water, and but any, I'm sure, like a natural water would be even better. You know, some clean rainwater, clean, like there's any clean rainwater clean stream or, you know, probably the more natural the water would be of benefit as far as you could get that kind of thing into your farming situation. So keeping the temperatures down is important. And so, and this is what you get after like 4 or 5 days. And it's really odoriferous, and it's important to use your sense of smell to evaluate its activities. You can smell if it's too wet. You can smell it if it's gone awry, and you really start to get linked to the smells of what you are looking for. Both your smell of locating the site to begin with, like as you do this over and over again, you'll start to understand what you want from the forest, what you want this culture to smell like, and what you want your field soil to smell like. This material introduced me to that concept that I often hear from foresters about the clean smell of the earth. This one, when it's properly brought through in its fruition to the next steps and things like that, sometimes when you smell it, it has a smell which is best described as very clean. It is like breathing very fresh air when you put it up to your nose and you smell it. So at this stage, it doesn't smell like that. It has different smells, and which are pretty, some of them pretty delicious, because sometimes it smells like bread a little bit, because it is, you know, bran and in various other cultures. But it can get really powerfully smelly. So let's see, I covered temperature pretty well. And now we're going to move on to the fourth culturing step. Which I think, I think is just an additional picture of IMO3. And what you really want also is clumps. The clumps will be basically bran clumps about the size of a golf ball is perfect, or a little smaller. But if it breaks into these clumps, you don't want to, when you're working with this material, the clumps are better. You don't want huge clumps, but, you know, golf ball size clumps are just perfect. You know, they still got some bran on the inside that the fungus is feeding on and the biology, and they're all white outside. And they have, like, when they have that much integrity still to them, they seem to be able to jump off onto other materials more vigorously than if they're all crushed up and just powdered. Are they small mushrooms? I'm sure that some of the mycelium in there will form mushrooms. Not all the fungus that's in there is, of course, going to form mushrooms. There's different fungal organisms and things. There's certainly actinomyces and bacteria all from the forest. You know, it's a broad spectrum culture of all different microbiology. I'm sure there's protozoa and different organisms. And certainly, you know, if you're going to really get into refinement of this system, and research projects for researchers and things to work on would be how to develop substrates to blend the materials towards a certain forest biology more than others. There's certainly plenty of research in the substrate biology interface area about how to guide this using different materials more. This is just what I'm presenting here is what we do and what is more just the traditional Korean approach, but there's a lot of room for development here and things to work on in that regard. Okay, so that's going to get to the tree. So I've got to talk about this, even though I don't think this is a picture of IMO4. Maybe it is. Sometimes it's kind of hard to tell. But the fourth step of the culture, so you've got this bran that exploded, and it's very vigorous, and it's got 110, 120 degrees, and it's white all over in chunks, and it took like 4 or 5 days, maybe a week or 10 days in the cooler temperature. You take that material, and you introduce it to your soil. So you take soil from your field, either right out of the field or the field edges. You take topsoil. We've used subsoil, topsoil blends. But you take your soil and you mix it into the bran at a 1-to-1 ratio, which helps stabilize and somewhat cool the pile as well, so you can pile it up a little bit higher. And the biology then adjusts to your soil conditions. And obviously it provides a different inoculant of itself. And so there's this interaction of the forest microbiology in its excited state mixing with your soils that you're going to be introducing it to in the field. And so that's called IMO4, which can remain warm for really long periods of time. It's just fascinating because we do a lot of composting too, and the vigor of these materials, which is just bran and soil, and the level of heat and biological activity compared to my regular composting materials, it's just phenomenally more active. So anyway, the soil bran mixture will remain warm, usually for quite an extended period of time. Yeah, it's shocking sometimes how long ammonia-like smells can continue from nitrogen-fixing organisms when there really is very little nitrogen in bran or sugar or rice. You know, it's very interesting, the smells and the activities that you'll see under the extended culture period. Some questions?
Can you use this to accelerate your normal compost?
Can we use it to accelerate the normal compost pile? Yes. Why don't I jump into that right away? I was just about to get into usages. So I think I've covered the IMO4 with the soil. Then I'll jump into that. Yes. Are we worried it's going to get hot when we add the soil? Yes, we constantly watch the temperature, and it can get too hot with soil in it. It usually does not, because the soil is going to actually bring down the temperature usually. However, we pile it higher with the soil in it, so it does have the potential to overheat, but much less likely than that previous stage with just the bran. That's really the stage you really got to pay attention to on a daily basis. And then, of course, we keep it covered against excessive rain, and that IMO4 is more or less stable at that point. It is. We do like to use it after it has, say, adjusted for about a week and has started to cool, is not at its peak of activity any longer, but is still warm. So that is our favorite time to use IMO4. But it will continue to cool, and we will use it. It never lasts a year on our farm, but we've made a batch in the fall and not used it all, and used it in the spring, you know, so 4 or 5 months, or I'm sure longer, it could be stored. But it is more active and more vigorous the sooner you use it to your culture stage. Not right away. It needs to get adjusted and cool a little bit. You could introduce it a little. When we use it in the field, we're transplanting or seeding right into the material usually. If it was hotter, you could probably introduce it into your field system, but wait a week or two to seed or transplant your plants into when it's used in the field. But we generally wait for it to start cooling, and then we'll start introducing it into the field. So those are the culture steps. Now I'm going to get into how we utilize the material on the field. So the material is very useful in a number of different aspects of agricultural production. So the traditional one that we use it in most frequently is direct application to the soils in the field. And that occurs after we have laid down compost on a bed or not. Say it occurs before we're going to seed or transplant into a field. And what we do is we take a 5-gallon bucket of that IMO4, the soil bran mixture, to a bed that is 3 feet wide by 80 feet long. So that is 240 square feet to 1 5-gallon bucket. And that's probably as close as I'm going to get to estimating my square foot to IMO usage in terms of those numbers, except for the broad concept of whatever 300 pounds of bran to the acre a year. We don't culture every square inch of the farm every year, but we do try to at least get to everywhere once. And there is this concept that once you've cultured for a year or 2 years or 3 years, you might not need to culture anymore because it might stabilize and stay in place. However, we keep seeing crop response to IMO culturing even 5 or 6 years later, so we're continuing to culture and use these materials. The reason we got into no-till was really because of Korean natural farming, because we picked up on Korean natural farming from some people that were returning from Hawaii, where it's very popular, and when we started practicing it, we got in touch with Cho and his family, and there's some extension agents in Hawaii and some practitioners out there, and they're very open in sharing of information. And essentially, they just encourage us towards no-till because once you've cultured all these organisms and all this fungus and you've introduced them into your field, of course, the reason there's no fungus in the field to begin with was because you tilled it to death. And so we really, it was the impetus to setting up a no-till vegetable system that was of use in our vegetable production system. It was really what moved us in that direction to a large degree, which I'll be talking about tomorrow as well. And so, and then that can kind of put it into context in how we use it in a no-till system. But for now, let me just describe it as we put it on the surface of the bed and then immediately mulch it over. We usually do that in the evening, not in the full sun, possibly in the morning, only in the hot sun if we have to. But if we do put it, whenever we put it down, we seek to cover it with mulch immediately, leaf, straw, or wood chip, or any combination of those materials, and then immediately water it in, which we're always watering it in anyway because we're transplanting or seeding as well. So that all happens at once. The IMO goes down, the seed goes down, the mulch goes down, the water goes on. And this culture will immediately explode into that mulch layer that you have just laid down. So you'll see the fungal strands reaching into the whole new food source, so you can really observe it as it acts in the field as well. So that's the general place that we use it mostly. And you certainly, if you have manufactured more and you want to lay it down thicker, you certainly could. And certainly sometimes we don't have enough to lay down a 5-gallon bucket to an 80-foot bed, and we'll lay it down to a 120-foot bed or a 160-foot bed or whatever's appropriate. So it's not like cut and dry, you need 5-gallon bucket to 240 square feet. It's kind of more flexible than that because you're working with a material that is proliferating itself. You know, it's a culture. It can keep moving, too. It's not like, you know. So a lot of these things, it's like the match explodes the fire. You know, you just need the starting material, and then it can explode itself when you keep feeding it in the field. On top of that, the material is used in such areas as one of our most popular is in the foliar feeding program. So we'll take maybe 1/2 gallon of the IMO. We will put it into a 5-gallon bucket of water and stir it very vigorously, which oxygenates the water and loosens the biology into the water, and then strain it and mix it into the foliar program and spray it out on the field immediately in a foliar spray. It can easily be liquefied and run through the irrigation system for delivery through an irrigation system. It is often used in, it can inoculate mulch piles in particular. So you got leaves coming in from cleanup or wood chips from the roadside. You can certainly inoculate your mulch piles as they come in. And I've never inoculated compost because I've always viewed compost as being so biologically active in its own right that I kind of see that as too competitive for where I would use IMO. And instead, we have experimented in the use of IMO in creation of side dress fertilizers of more or less fermenting raw materials themselves with the IMO culture. Take like the coffee ground straw mixture. Introduce the IMO into a more or less raw material, not composting already, and let the IMOs heat up and compost the new fertilizer materials and then side dress that onto the field. And that is called fermented mixed fertilizer. And so that's also another Korean approach to fertilizer usage. Another very popular area of its usage, which we've used it some, is in livestock water. And it is apparently very popular. And we've used it like this too, in animal bedding. So animals love to eat it, and it readily decomposes their bedding materials and feeds on the bedding material itself. So it provides them with a microbiological culture right beneath their feet that they can consume that is very healthy for them, at the same time as it's decontaminating their excessive smells from manures and things like that. So in Korea, it's used frequently, I'm told, for poultry and pig production to keep odors down. So those are some of the areas that it gets utilized on the farm. It is a very useful culture that can go into a lot of different aspects of farming. And probably that's just that you all probably have even more ideas of where you could start utilizing that material. So I'm going to flip forward because these are very interesting pictures. This is a sugar maple tree on one side of our house. And this is the way a tree frequently looks in our area. They have, you can see through it. The canopy is relatively weak. You know, even though this is in the full sun, there's no reason that shouldn't have a nicer canopy. But basically all the forest trees look like this now. And so this is just a general example of what a sugar maple tree looks in our vicinity. I could show you 30 pictures of trees that look just like this, maybe some of them worse. And then this tree on the other side of the house is where that IMO culture location is. And this tree looked even worse than the other tree a few years ago. We had dug a new water line through its roots and had dieback on the top, and it was very sparse. And so let's go back again. Every tree around my farm looks like that, and my IMO tree looks like that. And so, you know, that's a pretty large tree. It's multiple trunks, and it is unlikely that having bran piled by itself, which we don't even leave in place for it to feed as a fertilizer, could have that much of an effect on the plant. You know, I think it's pretty clear that it is the microbiological activity of bringing those forest organisms and introducing it into the farm that has invigorated that tree to that level of canopy cover. Not only that, but all the other sugar maples, of course, come down with anthracnose in September and drop their leaves and fail to pigment into orange. They kind of turn yellow-brown and fall off. This one achieved a much better level of pigmentation and a much longer holding of its leaves into fall. So extensive progress in the tree health, which other IMO producers have also told me that they've witnessed under their IMO locations. So, of course, that has me now thinking that I need to move my IMO production site to more trees around my farm, into my orchard, and, invigorate more forest with the actual culture site itself. Yeah.
I wonder if you, said you have an orchard, then do you use your IMO cultures at the base of trees?
Yes, do we use the IMO cultures in the base of trees? Absolutely, in the perennials too, just mixed under when we're laying down the mulch materials. We'll add the IMO into there too. Foliar, if we can ever get the foliar into the orchard. To tell you the truth, I'm a terrible orchardist. I put all the effort. We do great at vegetables, and I totally neglect my orchards. Just, 20, 30 trees or something we keep for the family to use. But I should certainly pay a lot more attention to it. But yes, obviously, it would be very useful in orchard conditions in the mulch layer around the trees as well. And yes, we are going to move the site in amongst the pears and apples. I'm going to talk about IMO3 to brand with the application rate.
Yeah.
Okay, so IMO3 goes into IMO4 at 1:1 soil by volume.
But back on IMO, when you create the IMO3, mm-hmm. you talk about the IMO2 to water ratio.
Mm-hmm. I could not reverse that. So you're looking to go the other way, back from 3:2, is what you're asking me.
The forward way
is I can't do that off the top of my head because let me just make this, try to make this one more point. It really, you overproduce IMO 1 and 2 so easily. There's going to be so much of it that when you mix it 1:1,000 with the water to hydrate, so 1 to 500 with water, so it's like a fluid ounce into 2 gallons of water. So it's a very small amount, 2 gallons of water. And so we'll do that on a large scale, 5-gallon buckets, just basically taking a handful, throwing it in there. And how many 5-gallon buckets of water does it take to hydrate 200 pounds of bran? I don't remember. Maybe 8 or 10, something like that. Yeah. So what we're doing is, we're gauging it by eye because you hydrate it and you're stirring it. So in other words, you lay down a few 5-gallon buckets, but it doesn't really soak into the bran homogeneous. So you have to then mix the bran all around, and then you squeeze it until the water just starts dripping out. So then we invariably end up adding more water once there's dry bran. And I should pay more attention to how many buckets of water are going on there. But squeeze test to get to the right hydration.
I have one other question.
Okay. So there's a lot of fungus in there. How much bacteria are in the culture? I don't know. I would imagine that there's still plenty of bacteria. Obviously, the fungal activity is right there. I imagine a lot of the heating comes from the bacteria. So, certainly I can't imagine the fungus itself getting the temperatures up that high. So it's bound to have plenty of bacteria in it. The actinomyces, which seem to be more heat-loving, and they kind of culture out as like a blue-green as it heats up. Those become very obvious as it gets hotter. And so, basically I've never put it under a microscope and kind of tried to figure out what's going on where, but that's one of the areas where I think research could really use to step in because we're specifically culturing. We want to see more fungal organisms in our field because they were so damaged. And so we definitely lean towards more fungal activity intentionally, but every field is probably not the same, and you could certainly influence the direction and balance of the materials by the substrates that you use. So, yeah, there's a lot of room. I would love people to jump in and start directing that into more specific cultures using the substrate materials. Yep. Oh, what did that say? 10, okay. Yeah, basically I'm calling the brand the substrate, but, you know, it's the whole thing, really. Right. Right. What qualities of the brand am I trying to emulate? Right. And that is the question. And that is what everybody wants to find that is doing this. So... the qualities that I personally am trying to emulate is, I have a reasonably good eye for carbon to nitrogen ratios. And it is clear to me that this has a reasonable amount of nitrogen, particularly the way it heats. Largely, I think that is due to unclean bran that is coming in with a lot more flour and, germ portion to it than I've seen with rice bran, which is much more harder and seemingly a little cleaner. However, the rice bran I've gotten in this country is still, it's like too fine ground, and I'm not happy with its quality either, and it's more expensive than the wheat bran. So basically, it is... my belief, the Koreans are working with a slightly more carbonaceous material, and that's why they have less heating difficulties, and they pile their piles deeper, like a foot deep, and we can't do that. We've got to keep them down like 6 inches or 4 or 8 or anywhere in that range. So I suspect that we have more nitrogen in our bran piles here than they have over there. And so I have tried to dilute the medium with different carbon materials. So in the handout, there was a talk about me using coconut coir, and that was successful to some degree. Sometimes it's not as successful as I would like to see because it breaks up those clumps that I'm looking for. So my best experiment where I've had good luck introducing another material, carbon-rich material, has been coconut coir mixed with wheat bran in maybe 10 or 20% coconut coir to the bran. And, we've experimented more and it went all right, but it seems like we've reduced that to about that level. And so we've had success using a little coconut coir in there, which is a little less expensive than bran, but no saving grace, really. And so then we've experimented. So that's some of the other experiments we've tried using is more basically nitrogen-rich fertilizer materials, whether that's a dry fish or a coffee ground or chicken feed or flour, and mixing it with carbon-rich materials like straw or leaf. And so we've tried various mixtures, and often, like when we create fertilizers, some of those materials are in the fermented fertilizer. They never culture as well as those bran chunks that are nice white chunks of fungal biological activity that are so vibrant and able to get out into the field. So, limited success on the materials, but so we're looking for something that will still maintain that level of activity, that food source, that ability to get out into the field and then inoculate into the field. But again, this is not really a perfect process. You can have some success, less success, maybe a meet, So I hope I at least answered that somewhat. Yeah.
You guys on your farm, do you often test this material against, all these, there's numerous now, it's like exploding commercial preparations, mycorrhizae, different kinds of bacteria?
Have we tested against commercial inoculants? I have not tested it side by side against commercial inoculants. However, I've used commercial inoculants and have had much better success on a whole level using the IMO than I ever had using a purchased commercial inoculant. So, you know, we do a lot of other things too with the no-till and foliar feeding and mineralization and really composting. So there's a lot of other aspects too. But I never saw the success that we're having now back when I used commercial inoculants. Now, the effective microorganism coming out of Japan, EM, the culture steps are very similar to this. And so effective microorganisms are a laboratory culture of certain microbiology that some different microbiologists put together to enhance crop growth, and then runs through very similar culturing processes. So that one is the most similar product that I've seen, but I haven't done side-by-side trials. I have done side-by-side trials of IMO and nothing, and certainly saw you know, results there. Oh, have I seen replacing the third step with liquid cultures? Very common in America is to go straight from IMO2 into a fertigation system or a foliar program to skip the expensive bran stage and just go right from a rice sugar to liquid preparation out into the field. I don't personally do that, but a lot of people do. Do we use it in the greenhouse with the seedlings? Oh, great question, Liz. Yes, we make our own potting soil, and the IMO is, you know, a critical aspect of, you know, that's since, we assemble the potting soil in the fall, so essentially it's a compost pile potting soil, and that is the major mover, I think, of the biology that gets into the potting soil. What have I seen? What's the impact of the IMO? I have not isolated it in terms of all the other production factors, you know, the no-till, you know, and all the foliar, because it's all kind of a package that goes together. As I said, you know, certainly I've seen no IMO here, IMO here, better crop production in terms of less disease and less insect assault and more vigor to the crop in general. So you know, I have not, like, isolated it to any great extent, except for it's part of an overall program that has been highly successful for us.
I think we have time for one more question.
Okay, one more question. How long does IMO4 last? It will hold... as I said, it's better when it's more active, so a week or two out of the final culture step. However, we have held it for 4 or 5 months at a time. I'm under the Korean natural farming textbooks, which I forgot to show to you guys. Let me just bust them out quick here. They say you can crate it up and hold it dry in an indoor environment for, I don't know, probably a year or so. And but we hold it outside under the tarp and use it within several months. So Chohan Q, these are a couple manuals that him and his family put together, Korean Natural Farming and Natural Farming Agricultural Materials, which have many recipes for various fermented fertilizers, really, but IMO being primary. And these have become somewhat hard to get. I understand that they're rewriting a new edition, so maybe that'll be coming out soon. They previously were available from Acres USA. I think maybe if you contact some of the people in Hawaii, Michael DuPont, I think, or some of the other practitioners in Hawaii, I think they still have copies. Cho apparently loves to come to Hawaii because it's a nice vacation spot, and he gives lectures there, and there's a large Korean population there. So that's really like the epicenter of American introduction to Korean natural farming. So there's a lot of information that can come out of Hawaii. And I think that's it for my time. Thank you, everybody.